Okay. Hi again. It's 9:03, and we should press ahead.
Your channel is recording.
We have. Can I please ask you to mute your speech line as well as your phone bridge line? If you're not speaking, it's gonna make things easier. Just to start by saying that we are going to record the telecon, and that the telecon recording is going to appear in the minutes page, although I'll try, hopefully with some help from Marika and Leo, to write down also some of what we're going to be covering today. But there is going to be the recording there. Several folks cannot connect, and I think it's going to be helpful for them to have access to such recording. Let me quickly scan. Okay. Marika, would you rather run the call, or I don't see Leo on, or you want me to press ahead with the rest of the call?
Eric, you can go ahead.
Okay. If you go to the nominal agenda that we've circulated, let me do that. Thank you, Marika. You bit me to this. Let's start with the agenda that we've circulated, mostly to, of course, announce the resuming of the telecons that we had started back in April, and also make a note here that we're moving to the open LVEM forum, effective right here and right now. Namely, the agenda that you've all looking at, probably requested logging in from now on, given that we're working toward the open alerts and open forum of the Live Vigo EM community. This is going to be in an open web page. So I suggest we all click now to what is going to be the area that is going to be hosting our agendas and any pertinent material, and this is now the open LVM. Oh, I see Marika put there the open one, which is...
Yes, I put the open one.
Okay. Previously was, and what we put in the email communication was that one that was behind the nominal Live Vigo EM login. That our web and authentication group managed to pull quickly some partition of that the DW Astronomy web area that is going to be open. So these telecons and pertinent discussions from this point on are going to go through without any authentication. Okay. Part of the announcement section, we have identified the need to establish a call for those monthly interactions. And historically, or at least over the last year or so, we have been using the third Thursday of the month at 1400 UTC. Of course, today is not the third, but the fourth. There were some other conflicts that led us to this choice for January. But is there any immediate feedback from all on whether this scheme can work for the, let's say, the 6 months horizon in terms of keeping up with this third Thursday of the month, 1400 UTC?
I had one comment. This is Mandeep from Stanford. That's 6 a.m. here on the West Coast, and I don't know if there's anyone else from the West. Daniel Holtz is visiting here, and I have talked about it. that that's just a little bit early. And it seems like if we did it at, say, 7 a.m. Pacific time, that would be 3 p.m. European time, which is not too late. So that would be our recommendation, or my recommendation at least. That's all.
Thank you. Anyone else either ready to second the motion or seriously object to it?
Hi, this is Tara Murphy from Sydney. I wonder if it's possible to occasionally have the meetings at another time. It's actually 1 a.m. in Sydney at the moment.
Indeed. I mean, we realize that we're spread effectively over all time zones, and finding an optimal time would be a mission impossible. Why don't we consider maybe having a dedicated call for, let's say, 12 hours.
Yes, I think.
Can you please mute your line, Niall?
Sorry.
But indeed, let's put also part of our logistics to work out as a Australia and Asia-friendly times for that. But for now, I'll second the motion to move the call to by 1 hour forward.
Great. Thanks, Eric.
Okay. Any other thoughts or concerns about this schedule? Okay, sounds like we can cross it out and move on to maybe more more interesting stuff. And we have asked Lisa Barsotti. Lisa Barsotti is the co-chair of the Joint Ramp Planning Committee within LIGO and Virgo, with Nicola Leroy being the counterpart in Virgo. And these folks have put together some slides to tell us what the roads to O3 looks like. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time to put direct links to those slides, but they are attached in the page. If you click at the lower end of the page that says attachments, there is a plus attachments section. Just click on it.
Which attachment? No, the status.
Okay. Somehow these were lost, maybe because Mike and I were editing the page at the same time.
Is it the 2018-0125 LVEM status?
Yes.
And, well, on the open LVEM page, that is an attachment.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
Peter, we're subject to that kind of a last-minute switch to the open LVEM. All right, Marika, in the meanwhile, if you don't mind loading your slides to that, to the open wiki, or I'll do that.
I upload in the wiki. It's the last file.
Okay, good enough. All right, so if you click on the attachments, you're going to see a G1800-136-V3, which is the slides of Lisa's. Let's give 10 seconds for all to get to that.
Oh, then I said the wrong one because I thought it was the this LVEM status one, but it's the G1800136 one.
The comment is LIGO Virgo Road 203.
Yeah, I didn't look over there. Thanks. I think the server is struggling at the moment as we're all downloading them.
Apparently. I can't get the response from the server even here at MIT. What can we do? Maybe we can put them somewhere on the cloud. anyone with any cloud accounts, or I guess GW Astronomy surely chose the wrong moment to become unresponsive.
I can put it somewhere, but it'll take me a minute.
Yeah, let's spend the minute to do that.
Can always put stuff in Dropbox or something.
Yep, indeed.
Yeah, I've got a box again. I'll have it up in half a minute.
Okay. Actually, I think I just got the response from our server, and I have the slides, at least the G1800136. I can see them now. Okay. I think the slides are not essential for what we're going to be discussing, so I would suggest Lisa to press ahead. As people, and of course, they're going to be good to be there to stay and be used for any sort of thinking and discussion further down the road. But I will suggest Lisa to press ahead. Lisa is right next to me here at MIT.
Yeah, thank you. I will be quick since you have many things in your agenda. So slide 2 gives you the overall picture for the next observing Rano 3. The goal that we have is to run O3 for approximately one calendar year with both LIGO detectors and Virgo running at the same time. The goal, the sensitivity goal that we have for both LIGO detectors is at least 120 megaparsec for binary neutron star range, and for Virgo is at least 65 megaparsec. This reflects what you'll find in our observing scenario document. Given the progress at the three sites right now, you know, all of them are performing many improvements with respect to O2. And so given current progress, we believe that these sensitivity goals will be achieved by the end of 2018. So that's the overall picture. And then the next slide, which is slide 3, shows you what a plausible O3 scenario might be. As you have seen in the past, we have 1 month long engineering run right before the beginning of the observing run, in which we test mainly, the main goal is to test the online analysis infrastructure together with the instrument. So usually we have 1 month engineering run, and then right after we transition into the observing run. So this model will apply also for O3. It's a model that has worked well in the past. Putting together what I said about our sensitivity goal, we think that a reasonable target for starting this engineering run is October, November 2018. And at this moment, we do not have that better error bars than this. So sometimes in that period, and consequently O3 would start a month after the beginning of this engineering run. So it could be November, December 2018. Again, we will have more information in the upcoming months. All sites are doing some intermediate commissioning work following improvements ahead of time to make sure that we have a better understanding of how long the tuning before the run would take. So over the summer we will have a more precise plan. The last point I want to make, which is slide 4, it regards possible additional engineering runs. We have done intermediate engineering runs like a few months before the beginning of the observing run in the past. At the moment, it's a bit hard for us to commit to any engineering runs over the summer. And so I think for this point, we will have to have a better understanding of how commissioning progressed at the three sites. So for now, we do not have a concrete plan for that. I think that's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. Questions for Lisa?
Yeah, very good.
I'm sorry, I think we've missed the TeamSpeak a question.
Yeah, I was wondering if you're planning to send out alerts during the engineering run.
Yeah, that's a good question. So because the main purpose of the engineering run is to test the infrastructure for the EM alert, at the moment we cannot guarantee that that would happen, but certainly it will be done on a best effort basis. So I think it's most likely there won't be a very, it might take order of hours to actually do that. But I think it's safe to say that we cannot commit to that right now. Probably Eric or Peter want to comment on that.
It is part of our planning to see the infrastructure in place, if you wish, well before the engineering runs. So at least at the level of the infrastructure, we should be there and ready to go. Although the engineering run per se is going to be the dress rehearsal for everything end to end. Of course, it goes without saying, nature may have different plans for the engineering runs. But I think at this point, at least I cannot say more than that. I mean, we're going to be, the engineering run is going to be a dress rehearsal of many things. Now, if an electromagnetic alert, if a situation calls for an electromagnetic alert, we should be able to respond.
It won't be a minute latency.
Probably not a minute latency, but it's really going to be as best as we can, given that this is the dress rehearsal.
Yeah, I would say that, our goal is to have the low latency pipelines reviewed and running online. But during that engineering run, there may be times when they're not running or so on. So if we have validated pipelines running and we have the infrastructure in place, then I think it's actually helpful to generate an alert as part of that. But it probably will go up and down during that engineering run as we're reconfiguring things.
Okay, good. Any other questions for Lisa? Okay, let's moving on to the next agenda items. To the next agenda item, we're running probably 5 minutes late. Hopefully we can catch up on the next set of slides, which are meant to give you a picture of where we stand within the LIGO-VIGO EM follow-up group. I also note that the server has recovered and is well behaving, so I suggest we can click on the slides that appear there. And again, let's give it a few seconds for everyone to bring up. And I think I'll walk you through these slides that we put together recently. Although my co-chairs Ken should chime in as we go. To begin with, I think we need to make maybe once again the statement that the LVC will issue those open and public alerts. We call them OPES, and this is of course without any memoranda of understanding, and this is starting with O3 and beyond. So the collaborations have been committed to that and have been also are committed to work out every technical aspect of that implementation with you, the EM community. So this is the first thing that we want to clarify and communicate once again with all. The next bullets and slides, they give mostly the questions that we're tackling right now, rather than answers. Remember, some of them will naturally involve you. So let me say that there has been extensive discussion that has started as soon as we got the BNS detection and other detections out of the door in terms of publication, at least for us at in Lago Vega. And this discussion has commenced on several aspects of those OPAs, from policy as well as on specifications and requirements that we need to write down and before we embark on any actual implementation. So moving to slide number two, we identify some of the questions that are we have been discussing, and I think they'll benefit from the discussion here and from your respective groups and feedback. So clearly there is a, when it comes to deciding what alerts to send out, clearly there is a balance you have to strike between prompt alerting on the existence of a detection candidate, and of course the fact that such promptness will intrinsically be subject to the fact that the alerts are not going to have 100% purity, namely as being solidly identified as detection candidates. Ultimately, such a solid statement is going to come from the offline analysis criteria. But you can see now that there are certain questions like, what is the level of purity of those alerts and confidence of being detection candidates that will make sense both from a scientific point of view as well as in terms of, if you wish, sociologically, that something that is going to make comfortable both the LIGO and Virgo collaboration, but if you wish, the astronomy community as a whole being the recipient of such alerts that are going to have something less than 100% purity, but they're going to be also prompt. The next example here that is being heavily debated is what should be the content of those OPAs, event content of those OPAs. What are the event properties that are going to be made available, given the fact that, of course, significant information is going to be promptly available. It's going to, though, come with significant errors, and it is likely this information is going to change over the course of hours, days, and months. And ultimately, the best error analysis and best estimate of every quantity that we communicate is going to come from the offline analysis. So these are, if you wish, some of the top-level questions that we have been debating and we need to continue ironing out before a system for OPAs is in place. Moving on to slide three. Slide three tries to tackle the question of what we do for events that at least at t equals zero, namely at the moment that the data are processed and events by LIGO analysis. Can you please, I think we have, can please, Francesco, can you please mute? Thank you. So the question here is, what do we do with triggers that are generated online that go beyond or actually below the detection candidate level, namely something that will never label, at least as LIGO and Virgo, as a detection candidate? So the question here is that what is the science payoff in pursuing such alerts in the other sectors, namely electromagnetic and neutrinos? Clearly, some of that can be pursuing more binary black holes, BNS detections that would have otherwise been missed, or, of course, any aspect of serendipity for something that has not been thought, has not been expected, and so the ability, or rather the plan of pursuing something that's going to be beyond the gold-plated standard for a detection is sent out at equal zero. Now, the second aspect of that is whether it is sensible to make such alerts available through the open public alerting system, the one that we've described earlier, or through some sort of a memorandum of understanding a partnership, or not making them available at all. You can think of what happened. It's O1 and O2. The community has received alerts at the level of 1 every 2 months. The question is, how do we continue, and if we continue any of that? Finally, another aspect around those events is, if available, if we make them available, what is the best way to pursue them in terms of accomplishing or reaching that science payoff that can be identified with them? Would it make sense a more collaborative way involving both Ligand Vir collaborations and the observer partners, or not? We're moving on to the last slide, the last few areas, which if folks on TeamSpeak community, it's going to be helpful. Thank you. So the another dimension in what we think needs to be addressed is what kind of science topics and corresponding measurements will be better accomplished by combining the gravitational wave and electromagnetic measurements, as a straightforward or trivial suggestion here is, for example, by having access in both ways at the full error budget, something for the corresponding measurements. And whether this is going to be a case for an MOU-based collaboration for those specific science driven efforts. Last bullet is mostly a piece of information that you probably it won't surprise you, namely that there has been extensive work within the Ligand Vir collaboration that has been underway in order to define and work and address the technical aspects of this implementation that are going to make sure that these open public alerts are in place in time for O3. The list, of course, I think probably goes beyond the scope of this telecon, but we're always available for any dedicated call where we can walk you through on those technical aspects and, of course, invite your participation, input, and direct input. Something that we have envisioned, although we haven't fleshed out completely, is once we collect such documentation, such collection of specifications and requirements, to invite some sort of a design review. And it has been thought that this design review should invite you, the end user, if you wish, of those OPAs, in order to comment and review how sound and appropriate our technical implementation is. And as always, we remain available to present this to you in maybe technical telecons or ad hoc telecons, and even periodically and hierarchically, if you wish to obtain a better understanding of how from HFT, from strain measurements, we end up with those open alerts. I'll stop here and open the floor for questions. I need to check the time though. Questions are coming.
I guess I can start, Eric, here. Sorry, this is Brad Senko. I think it's really nice.
Brad, sorry to interrupt you. We have someone on the phone line that has started speaking.
Okay.
You can be next. Can you please pick up on the phone line?
So roughly around when would that engineering run happen, before the end of summer? I'll be thinking sort of August, just, you know, at the end of the summer.
I think Lisa indicated that this is going to be October, November.
Okay, no. Let's talk about the opportunistic.
Oh, the opportunistic. Okay,
yeah. So to give you a sense, the Livingston Observatory will start commissioning the last part of commissioning, all the new parts installed in June. So I think it's unlikely that we will be ready for an engineering run with three detectors. I would say. So I think if it happens, it would probably not be before August. That would be my guess. But as I said, it's kind of too early. to say.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Brad, can you please go next?
Sure. I just wanted to say thank you for putting that all together, Eric, Leo, and Mark. I think it's very reassuring to hear you reiterate your commitment to doing open alerts in O3 and, viewing this as kind of a give and take with the EM community for what is, how these are all going to be designed. I think, we need to think long and hard about how best to incorporate feedback from what is admittedly kind of a very diverse group of EM follow-up people with very different answers to a lot of the questions that you've asked. But I think it's good to start the discussion now going forward.
Thank you, Brad. Any other thoughts or specific questions that the slides so far, both, I guess, also Lisa's and the most recent slides have generated to folks so far? Okay. Why don't we have allowed up to 20 minutes to hear from you all together with any updates, feedback.
Sì, ho sentito. Non so se c'è adesso. Ma io in realtà li metterei in
Carlo, can you please mute?
Danno più visibilità, sì.
Carlo, please mute.
Ma diciamo che secondo me è la cosa migliore
sure.
Per la gente d'accordo che rimette.
Okay, grazie. All right, so let's see. We have a block of 20 minutes earmarked here. I'm not sure how to organize that. I mean, some of the things that have been in our minds is that clearly you have observing proposals that are coming up. If there are any dates or any targets that we should keep in mind as we move forward. There is the experience of 02 and 01. There are some things that you've heard today. Hopefully they don't come as a surprise. But how shall we organize these 20 minutes? Is there anyone who would like to take a lead or go first at least and voice either specific feedback to what you've heard so far or how you want to see the path to open alerts for O3 happen?
This is Mandeep. I guess I'll make a general comment. I don't think I've heard this, although sound is sometimes hard.
Please allow me to interrupt you for 1 second. I just want to make sure that folks on TeamSpeak can hear you. TeamSpeak? Okay, thank you, Kyle. All right, please go ahead. They can indeed hear you. I didn't want to, All right, go. Please go ahead. Thank you.
I think I'll generally say I would push, and I think a lot of people would push for sort of the minimum to release alerts with the minimum amount of just release alerts more openly. That is, even if they have a pretty bad FAR, to go ahead and release them. We've heard this before. There's a lot of people who do surveys, and they can just go ahead and look. They're always taking data across the sky. And so this is always this sort of issue. And this was sent out, in the email, like, where should that threshold be? That's just a general comment. I would push for that to be more liberal versus conservative in sending them out and just, putting out the FAR so people know whether to follow up, allocate any resources to that or not.
Thank you for that. And if I may ask, do you envision that, being part of an open public alert, namely, would you like to see what we're doing in O1 and O2 at one event every 2 months, 2 months or so, to actually become more or less, or something of that order at least, of what open alerts will be?
I would say a little bit more. I'm on DES, so we were doing dedicated searches, so we wouldn't follow up everyone if they were ever And certainly, you know, black hole searches, we would not follow up as much. But if there was a hint of a neutron star for, you know, event, something like that, I think we would be fairly likely to follow that up with our time. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're basically...
This is Ido. Eric, can you hear me? Sorry for jumping
yes,
in.
Yes, please. No, no, no.
I raise my hand.
You're coming through fine.
So I suspect that you have some sort of data to indicate what is the purity versus the signal-to-noise ratio of detection based on O1 and O2 data. I think it would be useful, unless it's already in the slides, which I don't have in front of me, to circulate something like that to give people an indication of how quickly or slowly the purity degrades with false alarm rate or with signal-to-noise ratio. I think that will help a lot in quantifying what we actually want and how quickly, you know, we go from real detections to noise events.
Of course, I can say that this has been an area of active research within our groups. And maybe we can iterate for the next month's telecon. We can make that something that we can discuss next month. But there is nothing in the slides along these lines. First of all, because it has, if you wish, it's still being worked out, at least on our end. But this is a fine suggestion. Thank you.
If I can follow up on that, I mean, we're one of the ways we're talking about this internally is, you know, what level of purity makes sense for public alerts? Is it 90% pure? Is it 99% pure? Is it 50% pure? There are different opinions. Knowing your thoughts on that, I don't know how we systematically collect that, but at least it's going to be, you know, some balance of what the astronomy community wants to have out in the open versus what the LIGO and Virgo feel comfortable about putting out there and kind of implicitly saying, we think this is something viable. And if that were, you know, 10% purity, I don't think we would be comfortable with that, just on philosophical grounds. So, but understanding what is desirable, and especially if it has a kind of a quantitative or semi-quantitative basis in what science can be done with it. You know, if you say, well, we want, you know, even one false alarm per day, but we don't have any, you know, we either don't have a practical way to follow that up, or if we did find an optical transient in our survey, you know, our ability to determine that it's actually a real counterpart of this, you know, low confidence event, I mean, that would be important for knowing whether it's actually useful to release a larger number of event candidates versus a smaller number.
Indeed. Thank yep. you, Peter. But just to give you an order of magnitude feeling here, I think, you know, the moment that we start going down to one event a day sending out, the probability of that event being real diminishes quite rapidly. When I say rapidly, this is going to, we're talking about below 1% chance, the one per day event to be at least a binary system. Of course, we're never going to be able to make a statement for for systems that we don't know their rates, but
it could be a few percent in O3, but it's still a small number.
It is a small number.
Yeah. Exactly. But it might be 3% or 5%. I don't know.
We can present those plots, or we can present those plots following some sort of discussion within the LIGO Virgo team on the next month, but it is at a few percent. Okay, so I guess let's take the upshot of this discussion is that there is a certain part of the astronomy community that wants to receive open alerts at some low threshold. And they can use their own criteria on whether to follow up or not. And there is a need also to quantify how that probability of the event being a signal varies as a function of false alarm rate from LIGO and Virgo. And you'll hear from us hopefully within the next month. Any other comments or thoughts or feedback from our EM partners?
Do you see in the chat, Monty?
Yes. Okay, I see. I haven't kept the... is Monty next? Monty, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, so I wanted to say, first of all, thank you for initiating this sort of discussion in a very open and transparent forum. I think that's great. The more you do these sorts of forums, I think the optimal this would be for a strong gravitational wave. So I have both a comment and a question. Regarding this sort of discussion about whether the Pulsaram reach a 1 per month here, the experience in O1 and O2 can serve point.
Nancy, you're kind of breaking up. Maybe you are in voice activation, which you may want to change. It's not catastrophic. Namely, we can interpolate, but I don't know how others hear you.
Yeah, it's breaking up.
Oh, okay. I'm just using the TeamSpeak.
Yeah. Okay, under tools and then options, there is the ability to change, or indeed the thing you suggest, simply be closer to the mic, can do the job, and speak up.
So I will try again. My comment and question is that I think that using O1 and O2 as a starting point for these discussions, both in the context of false alarm rates the EM community is very comfortable with. O2 and O1 both yielded both beautiful detections as well as some triggers that were retracted later, and this was no problem for the EM community. As long as there is some number in the event packet that has some indication of significance, I think the EM community is mature enough to be able to do their own filtering and will not get upset if you retract triggers or anything like that. So I think the starting point should be where we were already in O1 and O2, and that was something that I think everybody was already very comfortable with. And the question I had was that I didn't see in any of the slides where what the current plan was for information that will be released with an alert. I mean, I realize, some things are must-have for the EM community, some things are just nice to have. And similarly for the gravitational wave community, some things are more important or less important to read. So I just wanted to know what the current thinking was on the information that will be released on the alerts. What is being discussed?
Peter, do you want to take this question, or shall I?
Well, I can. I mean, we've been discussing this, and I think it's fair to say that a starting point for discussion is that the information we'll release is the same as what we released in O2. So this would include the time, measure of significance, and it would include the distance information and include classification information, so some ability to tell you what type of a binary it is. Now, there have been concerns raised about does this cause the LIGO and Virgo to lose the ability to participate in cosmology measurements if we give out distance information and then other people can publish their own H0 measurements and so on. I think those are valid concerns, but we also recognize that properly doing cosmology is more than just using having an initial distance estimate out and doing a calculation from that. So although I can't say that we've decided this as a collaboration, I think that we have a general consensus that same information would be appropriate for the future. As I say, that's the starting point for discussion. So one thing that we could do, for instance, is change the way that the classification is provided. As you know, one of the reasons why we calculate numbers like this is that we can't say what the individual masses are and can't even tell, you know, necessarily whether something is in the binary neutron star is in the neutron star mass range versus a black hole mass, especially in low latency before we've done the parameter estimation. So so that's been a reason for our focus on having digested mass information. And anyway, did I answer your question?
Marcus, do you want to go next?
I think Graham Smith was before me.
Oh, a good catch. Graham.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So a general comment is that I support the idea of a rate of announcement of alerts and the information attached to them as being more or less the same as in O2. It seems like a natural evolution.
User disconnected from your channel.
My question, though, which is connected to that comment, is whether any thought is being given to what you might call publication policy then on the back of the open alerts. In O2, the EM community is not allowed to, rightly I should say, not allowed to publish anything about our follow-up observations until the grav wave event itself has been published. What are the views on how that would work in the context of open alerts in O3? Because you would then have a community who are following up without having an MOU in place.
Well, I think the point of departure here for anything that goes out of public.
Yes, apologies.
So the point of departure is that whatever goes out as an open public alert comes with no restrictions or conditions on what the publication may look like. So it's just like when a GRB alert goes out and people follow up on it, they can write their papers.
Microphone activated.
I missed most of your reply by pressing the wrong mute button. But I think the last sentence summarized it is that people can publish at will.
Whatever is out is an open public alert. I cannot see how it can be otherwise.
Right, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Stephen Smart here, if I may make a comment. I'm on the phone.
Please go ahead. You're going through.
So when two comments on the release of the low significance events, I think there are quite a few teams who would look at events down at the 1 per month level. So I certainly support that. And on the information release, I think getting the minimum of what was released in O2 would be really helpful. And the distance is really crucial for trying to identify counterparts. Even if you have to inflate the distance certainly a little bit, but I don't think anybody's going to do cosmology with the information that you provide. I really don't think that is a major issue. So I would push, I think we'd all push strongly for the 3D maps that you released in O2 for similar information to be provided. It's a key aspect of trying to identify the counterparts, and without it, it would be much more difficult.
Sounds good. Thank you, Stephen. And apologies, Marcus. I overlooked your hand up. Please go ahead.
It's fine. So I have a very quick question. So if we expect any very high energy gamma ray emission at all from any of these events, it should come in the very prompt phase. I was wondering if there are any kind of estimates for what the expected latency of these alerts will be for O3?
Yes. Well, we cannot see, at least for O3, how we can make such latency less than few minutes. As you know, within the broader gravitational wave electromagnetic community, there has been discussion and there has been work for making available triggers even as the during the in-spiral phase and before the merger. But currently, we're not in a technical position to make that part of our O3 goal. And so at least the discussion and technical requirements that we're putting down for O3, and we're working as we speak, the expectation is to have something out at the level of few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Without full vetting, though, right?
Without full vetting, right. So we're talking about a preliminary, if you wish, but otherwise fully automated alert that is going to capture the best knowledge that we have at the moment, or at least the machines have at the moment, on the quality of our alert.
Yeah, that sounds fine. I mean, even with a potential retraction later, I think that we'd rather take that than just be sure an hour later.
This is actually very very significant piece of information, Marcus. Namely, you're ready to sacrifice purity or quality in order to get the promptest possible alert. That touches, I think, on one of the slides that we brought up today. Okay, we're coming dangerously close to the top of the hour, although there are a few things that we should absolutely make sure we cover. We have...
This is Ido. Can I just say something quick?
Okay, we have Marco on the chat box. Ido, why don't you go ahead, and then we'll give the floor to the chat, the comment.
Yes.
Ido, go ahead.
I think that the discussion here has been, going in at least a couple of different directions, but I think that if we're going to talk about releasing events at a rate of about one per month or so, then I think the information that was released with alerts in O2 might be sufficient for initial searches for counterparts, but we were very quickly going to hit the wall in terms of other follow-up resources like Hubble Space Telescope and James Webb Space Telescope and other facilities where we might not be able to carry out observations at high of a rate. And I think that there's a good chance that we're going to hit that boundary already in O3, and it will be critical to have information beyond just what was released in O2 in order to make decisions about which events are most profitable to follow up from a scientific point of view. And that information might be things related to masses or spins or equation of state. And it doesn't mean that the information that will be released is necessarily what those numbers are exactly, but an indication even that some of those numbers might be detectable for some systems that will make them more interesting to study and the ones that are more useful to devote the expensive resources to. So, you know, I think this is a point of discussion that should be taken seriously as we move forward and develop this policy. Keeping in mind the information from O2 is a great starting point, but it might not be sufficient.
Good point. Thank you.
Can I jump in there and ask, so will it be possible to kind of refine exactly what that information would be? Because, I mean, you know, we have a limited ability to determine masses to start with, and we try to and spins, and that in our preparing papers that takes has taken weeks to months to kind of pin those things down. So, in terms of observational strategy, do you think now or in the future it will be possible to kind of be specific about what information is valuable?
Yeah, I think that this is exactly the point of having this conversation is a combination of what information will be useful and what information can be obtained on the relevant time scale, right? So, you know, if I told you that spins are a critical piece of information, and you told me that it takes 2 months to get any indication that there is a spin measurement, then we're at an impasse, right? So I think it would be useful. So I agree. I think that we should quantify a little bit more what information would be useful, but I think it will also be useful for you guys to tell us what kind of information and at what level you might have on what kind of time scale. So, for example, to make a decision about triggering Hubble Space Telescope, we might only need to know that there is a non-zero spin without knowing the full posterior distribution of what that measurement is. And so, you know, if that's something that can be done on a 24-hour time scale, then great. If it's still even to do that takes a month, then so be it. And you know, we kind of step back from that piece of information. So I think we need to have that conversation in understanding how long it takes to do the analysis as well on the gravitational wave side.
Was it most of that stuff, you know, available within a few days in the pipelines?
For GW17817, we basically have this degeneracy between mass ratio and spin, and so we never have resolved that. I mean, we make some assumptions about spins, and that influences what we conclude about the masses, for instance. So it's tricky, but you know, maybe there's some sort of useful observable that we can extract from that. It would just was not obvious yet what it is.
Okay.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And potentially, maybe there will be events with that are more inclined that we have them. I don't know. You know.
So related to this point, is there a plan on the timescale to release the full results of an analysis after the detection of an event? I mean, to some extent, for 170817, as far as I can tell, the final posterior distributions have not been released yet.
I don't think the collaboration has released any full posteriors for any of the events.
So I think that's another useful point of discussion, maybe for the next telecon, is to understand whether the collaboration is planning to release those kind of numbers on some time scale, 6 months, a year, whatever that number is, and just have a sense of how it's going to work.
Point well taken, Ido. Can I suggest, can I ask rather my co-chairs, Marek and Leo, whether they want to pick up Marco's comment via chat? Or do you want me to do that? Marco cannot have his mic working. Would you guys like to take this on, or shall I? Okay, so Marco is... Marika, are you...
Can you hear me? No, you can. I saw now the Marco's point. I have also another thing related to Marco's point that I say very quickly.
Let's broadcast Marco's comment in chat, because we have folks also on the phone. Do you mind doing that?
Okay, go.
Okay, you want me to do it? Okay, fine. So, Marco, sorry if I mispronounce your name, Marco. Is asking on chat, and in lack of a microphone, that one of the slides raised the question of allowing access for MOU-based partners to the full error budgets for all measurements and joint interpretation / analysis. He was wondering if someone could elaborate on that. This may be a silly question, but is the archival LIGO-VIRGO data stored only for identified events, or is everything available for MOU partners? Would it be available for joint analysis? ? And would that require a separate MOU? Another ? All right, Marika, if you want to touch upon that and or connect to that, please go ahead.
So about this, I think that we need to talk with the astronomers what will be the MOU for the future. So the past MOU will not work for the future. And so I think that is something that we need to understand with you, if there are some scientific goal to have this type of MOU in which there will be shared data from both sides. So if there is some I think scientific drivers that can in which both the in both the directions, so in which we can share some information and the astronomer from the other side can share their information.
I guess I want to speak to that. I know the time is a little over. This is Andy again. I don't know if you don't have opinion, but I kind of feel like the vision always was by 03, if there were enough events, that things would be open, like really open. And I'm not really sure I see a reason for MOUs anymore. I mean, you know, I would say it's been very exciting keeping things secret for a while from our colleagues in the world and then releasing them. But at some point, you know, everyone just wants to know, and I'm not sure there's a value in any secrecy anymore.
So, Andy, I guess what you're saying is that, let's say, in 1 month down the road after the next BNS or BBH detection in 03, we have completed all the parameter estimation and we have the final sky map, the final, all the posteriors of all the quantities that we measure. You want these things out without any MOUs. Is this what you're saying?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Why not at this point, right?
Okay. Vicky, let's see, we have Peter and Vicky, but we had Ryan also, his hand up a little bit earlier. Ryan, if you're taking us to a completely different topic, maybe you should let Peter and Vicky go next, since I suspect they're on this very request from Andy.
So, yeah, sure. I can wait until after Vicky.
All right, good. So maybe Peter, you go first and then Vicky.
Sure. So there really has been a change of philosophy in LVC, away from, you know, desiring secrecy and ownership of the events, and more toward, you know, what if we're going to put out something that's a candidate, we ought to be able to be confident at least in our estimation that it of its significance. And so we do intend to release reasonably confident events publicly. It's just a question of where the threshold is there. And it is true that we'll be completing the analysis of the gravitational wave data, and that will take time to get the final parameter estimation. Maybe there will be some useful intermediate information we can provide, but we're not trying to be strategically secret anymore. Let me put it that way. I think we're trying to be careful about what we put out, that it's well characterized, and that's driving many of our decisions. But it has been a philosophical change, and it has taken some time for the collaboration to come in that direction.
Vicky, more thoughts to add to this?
Yes. Let me see if I can speak without causing echo. Is that okay?
You're coming
fine.
Not really.
Oops.
Maybe it's not
too
though. Okay.
Fine.
All right. So I want to respond to whoever asked the question about everything being public, and I couldn't tell who it was. So yes, the O3, the moving forward, the triggers of events, significant events, low false alarm rate events, I think most everybody would agree don't need MOUs and secrecy. But everything being public is a very different statement. And I want to make an analogy with the astronomy community. In regular transient astronomy, you, of course, alert the whole community publicly. There is a transient somewhere, but you don't immediately share all your images, all your data, all your, images, I guess, and spectra immediately, right? You write your papers and maybe you have from NASA 6 months or 1 year of proprietary time, unless it's director's time. So trigger alerts, yes, but not all the data with parameter estimation and everything.
I mean, that's true for some facilities and not for others, though, Vicky, right? Like, you think about Swift or Fermi, all of our data is public immediately after it's taken.
That's true, but then you know, people above me will have to decide, including agencies, will have to decide whether LIGO is like Fermi or not. But it's not true that everywhere in astronomy everything becomes public immediately.
I agree with you completely on that point.
Yeah, I'd say to summarize. LIGO and Virgo still think it's important that LIGO and Virgo analyze the gravitational wave data carefully and publish the results of that. And the parameter estimation is very tricky. And maybe the community will evolve to the point where that'll be done more broadly. But at this point, we'll put out that detailed final information when we have it ready. But we are interested in providing, things that are useful for finding and identifying and characterizing counterparts.
This has been all great discussion.
Okay, well, say,
Andy, if you can give me just 1 second. I think we should also try to wrap up the call. Hopefully, maybe in the next 10 to 15 minutes, we do have some important additional business we want to communicate and work out with you. So maybe we should give it another 5 minutes. I think we have. Andy, if I'm not wrong, you are on the phone line to comment.
Yeah, Matt.
And then we have Ryan
Andy
Foley,
Stanford, and
Ryan Foley, and Leo Singer. Go ahead.
To Vicky, I think there's a couple of differences. One, when astronomy images, anybody can reduce. Many people around the world can reduce. Much harder to reduce gravitational wave data. Mostly you guys are the experts. Okay, I still understand you might want to keep some control. But second, I think I was mostly responding to the idea of MOUs. Okay, so say you don't want to release all your strain data, but is there really a reason to have MOUs where you would release, some more of that strain data to certain astronomers? That I was saying I'm not really sure there is a reason for it. So just that. Thanks.
Good. Ryan, you've been waiting patiently on that. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was just curious about what was going to happen with the non-compact binary merger events or, anything else. They're going to be included in this, correct?
Correct. Leah.
Actually, I had a comment about coming back to what Ida was saying about having more information about the properties of sources for prioritizing follow-up. But this last comment about gravitational wave data being harder to analyze than astronomical images just made me chuckle a little bit, because I just think that's a matter of perspective. I mean, but anyway, if there are specific qualitative pieces of information that would help flag events for higher priority follow-up, I wonder if identifying those properties and describing them qualitatively in the GCN circular is clear.
Leah, I'm sorry, I was distracted for a second and I missed whether this is a question for all or specific folks online right now, or?
Well, sure, it's a question for everyone. For example, would it be useful to, would it be useful to include in the GCN circulars a statement of, there is a 90% probability that the inclination angle of this event is less than 20 degrees or something like that?
Any of the observer folks who would like to? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Kind of what Gita was saying, the more info, the better. If, you know, what might be useful for this discussion is sort of a list of things you might potentially release, and then, and then we could take that up in the next telecon, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Ido. Let me suggest that we don't try to do this on the fly, but actually have a chance to sit down and have some back and forth with the EM liaison.
Sounds good. That couldn't have segued better than we couldn't have a better segue than this, namely a sit down and going around those issues with what we have lined up as the next few items, hopefully shorter ones, in the agenda today, and namely. Planning a meeting, and Marika has put together some slides in order to move on with the idea that we need to meet in and go over this face to face. Marika, why don't you pick it up from here?
Yeah, we can meet very quickly. So there is a slide, and we have this idea of two town hall meetings of one day, one in the United States and one in Europe. We talk about this among LVC, and we would like to make this soon. And in particular, so we think about March, April. And there are some possible options, and we will send you also a doodle to try to see where we can maximize the participation. And the place are in United States, Boston or Atlanta. And the date could be 16, 17 March, 29, 30 March. And the other place in Europe that we are thinking is Cascina, so at the Virgo site, and there is some interval of period that we want to use for this meeting, and we will send you some doodle. So first of all, we want to ask you if March, April can work for you, and the goal of this meeting will be to talk, to discuss and collect feedback like today, but in a face-to-face, and talk about the policy, possible so MOU, and also talk about the joint scientific project maybe together. And so this is the our idea. And are there comments about this?
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to get together and do this more face-to-face. I think we'll all need to just look at the possible dates you've put out there.
Okay, good. So watch out for another email that's going to invite you to indicate your availability over Doodle. If there are no other comments on that, then while we still have those slides up, Marika has an update on what we've been working on in terms of O2 publication form on EM operations. Marika, please go ahead.
So, okay. So this is about our publication. So the GCN of the triggers that we sent in O2 will be public released when we will have our final O2 binary black hole catalog paper. So we are now rerunning the search over one and two. We are using the final calibrated data, the noise, and what we expect is not to have a paper before April and May. So if you are planning to write paper you are working on the paper or about all the triggers sent in O2, that's the timeline for our publication and the release of all the triggers. And another thing that we want to let you know that there is our electromagnetic follow-up team inside LIGO and Virgo that is writing a paper about the entire activity of O2 electromagnetic follow-up inside the collaboration. And this paper will describe the entire O2 low latency alert generation, vetting, and distribution, and will give an overview of the gravitational wave information sent to the astronomers and how these support your searches. And this paper will be submitted at the same time of the catalog paper, so at the moment of the release of the GCN.
Thank you, Marika. Any questions for on the last two topics we brought up? Okay, Marcos, I see there is some discussion over chat for some previous one. I don't think I'm in a position to comment on the fly right here right now. I'll suggest, I think overall, as a group or as a forum, to actually do use our mailing list for any questions and open floor for discussion. So, Marcos, I invite you to take this on over email, either to specific people or over the whole mailing list. I'm sorry, Andy, you've said something that I didn't catch, and I'm not sure if the folks on TeamSpeak managed to do that. Can you please repeat? All right. Okay. I think we'll start having people getting disconnected. The last item here is mostly to something that we already touched upon at the overview presentation of the issues that the LIGO and Virgo collaboration are addressing in terms of EM, open alert implementation. And this is a technical document, a specification and requirements brainstorming to which we don't want to bring anything specific right here, right now, but we hope maybe in a hierarchical way again to spend a few minutes on upcoming calls, making down payments to what may be helpful ultimately in your use of those alerts and understanding of how our system works.
In addition, Eric, at this point.
So I think with that, we're at the nominal end of the call and the agenda. Is there any other business for today? Okay, let's confirm that we're going to be meeting in February. The third Thursday is going to be the 15th at 7 a.m. Pacific time. And we're going to take it as an action to identify a time slot or a makeup calls for folks in Australia as well as in Asia, where this time slot is not exactly friendly. With that, thanks everyone for calling in, and we'll be in touch via email from this point on as we prepare for O3. Thanks again, and bye.